Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com. And go check out high-quality products if you are into cleaning cars. Hey, Nick. And to go have some interactions, everybody should go over to the HyperClean Specialist group on Facebook. I've seen a lot of people there. It's a fun time. Let's get into some buy and sell. And I'm selling. And some of it comes out of the specialist group. So come on now, everybody have fun. This is what we love about this stuff is you get into the car talk and all this stuff. And, you know, you have a good time giving people a hard time. Listen, I posted that photo the other day of it was Thursday night. I was so excited. I've been waiting all week to take the doors, take the top off. I get it. You know, there's C10 Nick doesn't understand. You don't understand why I only roll with two doors off. Listen, that's me. That's the way I do it. But you know what? I'm selling. In all this, I'm selling. And I'm selling the panty weights that can't hold the cold. Wait, that's me. I can't do it. I'm out. Like I told you Friday, like, oh, it was brutal coming in Friday morning. I wasn't ready for the cold. But let me tell you this number, which was this morning. I had all weekend to plan and still didn't plan. 37 degrees.
With doors off?
Doors off, top off. 37 degree drive into the HQ today. So I'm selling. I can't do the cold anymore. I'm out. Like, I can't do it. Finished.
Well, you seem to have a real problem with the weather report over there. I mean, you kind of took the doors off prematurely. You know, they do forecast weather. I get it. Oklahoma can have a little bit more of a headache of a forecast, but I got to think this is just user error. Springtime right, isn't here yet.
That's what I told you, right? The first one, I was still on St. Pete Beach Weather Channel app. Like, it wrong. Never moved back to Tulsa.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, oh. Never got it figured out. Yeah, that's, look, last Jeep I had never had doors or top on ever. And I don't think I could do that now. Because right? even when I lived in San Diego, you know, I lived right on the beach. And the wintertime got pretty brisk. You know, if you had to leave at 7-8 o'clock in the morning, marine layer, it's still, you know, 38 degrees. You're going, oh, yeah, this is different time in my life. I was like, yeah, man, this is great. Now I'd be like, count me out.
Yeah.
I got to have some heaters. Yeah. I feel you on that.
It's going back into the bay, and it's going to rest until maybe mid-April.
Yeah. I think. If you could deposit that storage check to HQ, that'd be nice. You know, we've been storing that Jeep a little while, so we're going to go ahead and get you an invoice from the accounting department and get that figured out. Well, I have an odd buy this week. The guy that got me into MMA, Mark Coleman, he had a gym in my hometown called the Hammer House with him and Kevin Randleman. He had a real serious situation, saved his parents from a house fire. And he ended up, he ended up, you know, pretty banged up in the ER. And, you know, the fact that it seems like he's pulling through it, his parents are pulling through, I'm going to buy, but just a wild story. You know, it's kind of a guy that's had a tough life, especially post fighting. Drugs, alcohol, that kind of stuff, and got his life back on track. And then this hits his family. They live really close to where I grew up. And so I'm going to buy that. It turned out, I think as of, you know, this weekend, it was still a happy story. He was awake and everything. But I mean, when he woke up, he thought his parents were dead, didn't even know that he got him out, but, you know, went in heroically, got his parents out. And look, he's the first UFC heavyweight champ. And somebody that I was around at Ohio State because they used to work out in a place called Larkin Hall that no longer exists. And so been pulling for him. And I got word that he does pop in and listen to us from time to time. So nice. Mark, if you're out there, buddy, really happy that you're all right.
Yeah, that's badass, right? I mean, that's all you can say. I don't know the whole story, just hearing what you had to say. Yeah, and you just go, wow.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. So I want to say this because I kind of mentioned this a second ago and when we were talking about the Jeep. And I love, and that's why I want to just go ahead and say publicly, like, this is part of why we do Car Talk, like Car Life. And everybody got their own, gets their own choice of what they want to do. I want to keep two doors on, two doors off. Like, I do like my Rockstar wheels. Hey, yeah. Right? Like, as I got, you know, jokes about the Rockstar wheels. Like, listen, it's a 2011 Jeep. I got to stay in that era, right? Like,
yeah.
So, you know, this is, and I want to encourage it too. Like, I mean, this is what's fun. But if people kind of are the, you know, don't like to think of it as a joke and have fun, you know, hey, just take a little deep breath, you know, like I do enjoy the fun camaraderie of giving each other crap or shit, you know, whatever. Like, listen, Billy's a great sport at it because he kind of eggs it on, right? Like, so some of us egg it on, some of us really enjoy it. It's a good time. I did want to say thanks also, another public announcement. I'm just joking, but thanks, Nick. You gave me a referral to a podcast I started listening to, the Lex Fridman Show, right? And and I really enjoyed a conversation that he had with Kimball Musk. And I didn't know, which most of, I guess most of us don't know, I didn't know there was other Musk. Like, I didn't know Elon had a brother. Like, this dude shows up in a cowboy ad. He's from, or not from, but is living down in Austin. Is into restaurants and all this other stuff. Like, a much different guy. And it was a really great podcast. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, it's, first of all, Lex is like a certified genius. You know, I think he's what, an MIT engineer or something like that. And he's real involved in robotics and stuff like that. And he's, for those that don't know, he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Like, he's the real deal dude. And, you know, just, I like his conversation style. I don't think I can listen to it, you know, all the time, every day. You know, it's a little bit more in depth, but you know, for those couple times a month when he has somebody that interests you or you're like, I don't know this person, but it sounds interesting. I think it's a great podcast. You know, people always ask me for recommendations. He would be high on my list as just changing up the speed, right? Like, we all love listening to comedy podcasts or sports podcasts or, you know, anything that you're into. But Lex is he's a good interviewer. He's funny. You know, you got to catch his humor and you got to look at it the right way. But yeah, man, it's a great podcast. And that was a good episode for sure.
A wild takeaway. Kimball actually was paralyzed for 3 days. Freak accident, falling off of a tube. Paralyzed for three
Here's
days.
What's like, crazy. Wild, so, you know, when you have your family in town, I had my family in town this weekend. They catch you up on everything. I don't know if that's something that happens in your family, but I don't know too much going on with anybody. So I have this guy that I went to high school with. Speak about freak accidents, paralyzed for a few days is what rattled my brain. He was playing softball, ran into a fence, and severed his spinal cord. Think about that. He lives in San Francisco now. I went to high school with him, known him all through growing up. Obviously just lost touch, whatever. Last time I saw him was like skiing in Lake Tahoe years ago. And you know, your family just lays this on you. Hey, have you heard? It's like, no, I haven't heard. Why would I have heard that? My dad's like, yeah, you know, like, well, I think he's getting feeling back in extremities. So there's like all these crazy things that can happen to people. And it gets you thinking, like bringing up Kimball, and he just had these 3 days where he didn't know he was going to walk. And it's like, you just don't know when this shit can hit you. Right. Yeah. Like, it's a why. And when you hear the story, you're like, damn, that I've been tubing. Damn, I played softball. You know, damn, I did this and that shit didn't happen. You know, it's just like you kind of reflect back on that stuff when you hear people's story.
Yeah, it's wild. Another thing that I really enjoyed was their discussion about road trips and the importance of taking road trips and driving a car and how important it is for the mental psyche. Like, and I heard that and I just went, huh. I think I've really taken that for granted. It's something I've talked about. I love to take road trips. Listen, we took one this weekend, just going down to Oklahoma City to go to a soccer game. But, you know, once I heard that, then I'm driving. You know, I've got about an hour and a half drive. That's not some massive road trip. But, geez, I haven't just been cruising like that mindlessly for, I don't know, years. And that used to be a thing that I did on an almost daily basis. And you get this chance to unplug or, you know, whatever it is you need to do. Do you find, I think I find that I have a different psyche in the different vehicles that I'm in, right? My Titan, so old Titan guy here, right? Love being old Titan guy. Titan is gone though, and I remember I stopped listening to stuff when I would get in my Titan, and I didn't have my kids anymore, and they were all, Titan became to me like a no sound, no music, nothing, and it was just a place to be. Now the Jeep's different, right? It's we've got EDM, we're going crazy, right? So it's always
well, you do have those rock star wheels, so that makes sense. Rocking Limp Bizkit in your 2011 Rockstar wheels.
But it kind of is the connection point from cars to PERT. Like there, that's a special time for many of us. Listen, I think the fun time for me as I'm driving down the road is what all you get to see.
Yeah, yeah.
The types of cars, the fascinating one for me this weekend was, and this was a cool drive. Mildred called me. We were chatting for a little bit because we know that at some point in time, you're going to get to take these trips. He takes them almost weekend, every weekend for softball. Yeah. I'm now in soccer. We're waiting for that time when you get to be the road trip weekend, seeing your kids off to go play sports. But, you know, it was suddenly this trailer of this giant, you know, tires. And I'm like, okay, we're coming up on something. Next was a truck, but then the tires were literally like this little tiny. And you go, wow, really interesting to see what this monster truck, right? When they have to dismantle it in a sense, and then it's cruising down the road. We saw auction cars. This was an interesting point to educate people in the vehicle about what it means to have an auction car. And that you buy your vehicle that looks like, you know, so it was some guy from Oklahoma City probably paying his sons to come down to the auction, pick up these demolished vehicles, right? Yep. They still have the writing all over the window, so you know what they are. But most people don't understand. You got these junkers going down the road, and you go, yeah, that's going to be a car that's sold at a lot here in about 60 days.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, look, we have a huge auction out here. You got multiple auctions probably in different cities from Tulsa to Oklahoma City. But you're right. You know, a lot of people don't know what they're looking at. And they're like, oh, I'd never drive that. It's like, you're probably driving one of those right now if you bought a used vehicle. That's what it looked like before you bought it. The auction cars, that's a good spot. You know, what I always like, especially driving through the Midwest, is the really odd, like, Jesus signs. You know, like you just see them everywhere. Somebody took like a big billboard out. You know, we have them out here too. You know, we spot all kinds of like, first of all, I really like seeing vintage cars, you know, on those long road trips, which isn't as common anymore. You know, it doesn't seem like those are getting out and spreading their legs like they once did. But I got a limit to the road trip thing for me. So I'm in agreement. If I can get somewhere in an hour or two, I told you my highlight from here to Long Beach, from here to LA, from here to San Diego, that last hour, I'm not really enjoying it anymore. Like, I'm like, this is just too long in the car, right? It's almost like you could fly, but if you fly, you know what, you know, same to Phoenix. I just rather fly to a lot of places, but most of the places I would go on a road trip from Vegas is kind of like 1 hour too long for me. And there's other guys that are like, dude, I'll drive 10 hours and it doesn't bother me. I'm just not one of those guys.
So I started looking around because I kept seeing a lot of the same stuff. And here in Oklahoma, I've always, listen, I'm a truck guy, so I always know that we got tons of trucks. But I just go, huh, is that just here? I wonder, is that only because I'm in Oklahoma? What do you think? 2023, the top three vehicles sold across the country. I went to look it up because I was like, huh, we talk about the crossover. We talk about Toyota. We talk about all the cars. Did we as Americans really buy our top three vehicle sales of all last year? Were they really all trucks? Number three, Ram truck guy. Congratulations, all of you out there. 444,000 sold. Ram truck comes in number three. Number two, Silverado, 543,000.
Well, we know just the F-150 is number
just
one.
Just as Oklahoma is Ford truck, like the nation is still Ford truck with 750,000 units sold.
Well, you have to remember, these numbers are skewed because they sell to fleets. So fleets get counted in these numbers. I think the number one selling car is like Corolla, you know, those types of things that don't have so much fleet usage. But yeah, man, I mean, people love
trucks. So is that why Tesla's up there? Tesla was like at 6 or 7. I was surprised.
No, they just sell a ton of cars. I mean, they're selling a ton of cars. Like, you know,
my Rogue was 9.
What's that?
My Rogue was 9. That was cool to see.
Yeah, I mean,
Tesla Model Y, 385,000 units sold last year. They came in at the fifth.
That's a lot of units, dude.
Yeah.
That's a lot of units.
Yeah.
And again, it's about affordability, right? They're in that price point that so many manufacturers have abandoned, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like Tesla Model 3, Tesla Model Y, they're right in that realm where if you catch them at the right time, you're getting them for under $50,000, right? And so many manufacturers have just abandoned that $35,000 car. And I don't understand it, especially when you keep hearing all the inflation. You know, I don't know if you saw the genius marketing behind IKEA. They're running ads now like, hey, we're lowering the price of everything that went up during COVID, you know, on hundreds of things in our store. I think car manufacturers, to me, have an interesting conundrum. If you can keep selling them, keep the price elevated. By all signs, you're not selling as many as you used to, especially during the past 3 years. I wonder if we're going to see the return of the sub $50,000 vehicle. I mean, I don't know what choice you have.
No idea. I mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can't pay $75,000 for a Bronco, right? That's going to wear off at some point. And so I've said this before. Everybody thinks that I hate Bronco. No, I hate Bronco at $75,000. I don't hate Bronco at $45,000. It's a great $45,000 car. It's just not a great $75,000 car, $65,000 car. It's just not that, right? Just like I would say about the top level Jeep Wranglers, they're not $60,000, right? If you get in a Jeep, you're not like, wow, this is a $60,000 ride. It's like, no, this is really great at 40. And it is. That's where it's great. But I think there's a real, you know, crossroads here. For some of these manufacturers, I know Dodge is in it. You know, Stellantis is in it now. I just don't know if they're going to back off. Like, that's the whole thing. Have they just retooled themselves to a point where they can't get back into that $30,000 to $45,000 car? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But see, we're cruising down the road. We end up after the game. We go land at this place called Cattleman's. Just picked a place out of the blue, right? Wanted some steak. It was cool, right? See other people now inside the group posting steaks that they ate. I think Wesley ate a steak, showed an interesting Dodge truck laid out.
Yeah,
you know,
for
it was fun. You know, I didn't know what to expect, except I go, listen, I don't want to go to a chain place, and I'm in another place, and I almost really felt like a tourist from Oklahoma, but going into the stockyards of Oklahoma City. This was a different place than I was talking to some guy, and he's like, you like the country? I'm like, dude, I'm from like middle of the city. Like, I'm city boy. Like,
you know? Not really, dog.
I showed up in like flip flops. Like, they were in cowboy hats. And listen, this, I showed you the big, just giant mural of cattle and the way cowboys were. And, you know, this is the heart of who we used to be, right? So it found out that my mom used to, as a little girl, because her parents were in the cattle auction business, they would come there to that auction. And then my granddad wanted to always eat at this place called Cattleman's. So got to have some really great steak, really great place. But for me, the highlight, actually, after all that, Nick, I had a great strip. I don't care what you say. Listen, I even told you earlier, Lex and even my new favorite, Kimball, right? Like, they too are into the strip.
Kimball Musk. Kimball Musk is who we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. It's my favorite Kimball. Yeah. So, Double Deuce was their beer that they had. And I go, huh, where's it from? Krebs. My very first craft beer in the 90s. Was from Krebs and a local brewery there called Chalk. And I go, man, I'd love to have a chalk beer from Krebs. They go, that's what this is. Fucking 22 ounces of unfiltered wheat. I had to take a 4-pack to go so I could have another one here in this episode. Like, listen, this is, I love this beer. And it was such a blast from the past from, wow, this, when you taste flavors from so long ago, you just go, yeah. Oh, that steak was good. But man, this beer, I don't know.
I got to tell you this. This was like steak? The hillbilly meetup down there at the Cattleman's, huh? you got it from Krebs? Man, I can't wait. Yeah, give me one of those tall boys.
Listen, dude, I told you,
that had to be hell of a scene down there at Cattleman's.
I love the little kid that walked in. He had the little vest and had the little sheep vest on, had his cowboy hat. They all had on.
Oh, he's boots. In. You know he's in 4-H, 100%.
Kind of love it. I love it.
No, I'm in. I love those places. I mean, we have one here. It's called the Golden Steer. I think it's been in town like 100 years. Same thing. Go in there. It feels like 100 years ago. The waitresses, by the way, have all been there like 40 years. You know, good for them. That's not a knock. We went to a steakhouse Friday. Much different thing. But I did see something funny at the steakhouse that we talk about all the time. We saw an unruly customer. One table over. The steak, he wanted it medium rare. It came out medium, the whole thing. So I happen to know the people at the steakhouse very well. They're part of an organization where we take care of the owner's fleet of vehicles. And I get a text message. And I look at my phone and it goes, hey, is there a scene at the table next to you while you're at the steakhouse? I said, yeah, how'd you know? He goes, dude, we have security at the door. This guy might have to be removed. And I'm like, oh, it's that bad. I said, look, he goes, can you just keep an eye? He goes, because we got new staff there. You know, there's new people there. Everybody's kind of nervous. First thing I thought of, which we talk about all the time, is there any way he didn't get spit, pubic hair, something on his steak when it came back out? Like, for all of you out there, the things that must go on when you're an unruly customer wanting your food recooked, I can't believe anybody does it. Mm-mm. So I'm like texting my buddy back. I go, what are you guys doing back there in the kitchen? He goes, I'm not there. Stop texting me. He goes, we don't do that. This is my work phone, you know, this kind of thing. And I go, but I watched it, you know, and then our waitress was their waitress. And I go, hey. She goes, we're really sorry. I go, don't apologize to us. I said, I'm enjoying the show. I know that it's, but trust me, it's all good. Then I showed her that it was her boss. I said, he knows you're doing a good job. Just relax. Like, these are the kind of people. And I just thought to myself, like, dude, do you really not think that that guy back there is going to, if you were working back there, you would do something to his food.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I guess I'll be up front.
You've had that cheese, right? Famunda cheese?
100%. There's no way you wouldn't do something to his food if this guy was such a dick. And the funny thing is, the security came in and
removed them. If you ever work at a restaurant, you never complain about food. So I never did.
Yeah. See, I never worked at a restaurant, but I just think it's common sense. Like, I don't mess with anybody that messes with my food, because I always assume that something might go on anyway, somebody goofing off in the back. So I'm not going to give them any reasons. You know, I'm just like, hey, please, thank you. Oh, this is awesome. I don't care if it's the worst thing I ever had. I'm just not chancing it.
And, you know, there's an interesting thing that's kind of evolving around these moments, right? Was he upset? You know, you really don't know, right? His steak didn't come out a certain way. And, hey, you know, if I wasn't paying as much, I wouldn't care. This, you know, when you have an experience and you're paying for something, what level does somebody's, you know, I guess graces or freak out moments. I saw a post from a guy inside one of our detailing groups inside of Facebook. And he was saying now he had somebody previously that had come in at this $60, you know, in and outside type cleaning. But now that she raised the price, she was starting to have a fit. And you start to wonder around times like we always talk, economy and how finances begin to change people. And not saying it was this guy, but just thinking about these moments, because a lot of us will probably begin to have more, experiences with customers or, you know, inside of our business, or whether it's I'd like to clean my own cars and I'm working with somebody, whatever, these experiences that kind of get elevated off of it. And I want to tie in a video that is just launching, and that's our YouTube video about Fuego wheel cleaning. And we got two. One, this week is you directly. Next week is you and I together. And the common theme to it is this idea of, hey, I've got a moment here and I've got a really bad wheel. Should I really be concerned? The same as, you know, we talk about, like, listen, you're going to pay for this stick. You're going to, like, you've got, why would you ruin your moment? Why would you ruin your experience? So I'm working on a really beat up wheel. I got a lot of brake dust. You do something different in these videos where you'll soak it down, rinse it back, re-soak. You'll go through and you even say, hey, you know, some people might think this is a little overboard.
Yeah. I think there's something I wish I was taught. You know, I think you can probably say this as well. When I started detailing cars, I wasn't really taught about the chemicals. It was like, hey, just, you know, I mean, look, my first boss used to say this, and I still joke with a buddy of mine that worked there with me, just throw the pink shit on it. Like, that's, he didn't even know what the polish was called. He's like, yeah, just hit that with the pink shit. And so when my buddy texts me now, he still uses those terms with me because that's how we started. So when I started in the business, I think it's very similar to you. First of all, we had less chemicals and we understood them way less, right? That's how so much damage happened. Nobody told us. Even the guys that were dropping it off on the truck didn't know what the hell they were selling. And so, and largely some of them still don't know what they're selling. But it was really bad when we got our start. So I think, you know, when I look at using chemicals to my advantage, I am more likely today in my career, knowing what I know, that if I've picked the right chemicals with the right chemical company, that, hey, maybe if I use a little extra here on the front end, it's going to save me time on the back end. It's going to save me scratching up the wheel. It's going to save me scratching the paint. So I'll take and use chemicals to my advantage. It's something I wish I was taught. And I think that's kind of the theme a lot of times on not only our YouTube, but on the podcast. You know, we're going to have a conversation at the end of this episode that's very similar to that. You know, people give out advice and then they gave me no context, right? And I just had to like figure my way through it. So I think a lot of times what you and I are coming from is, I wish somebody would have just said this to me, right? Yep. I just wish somebody would have said, hey, take this degreaser, spray the wheel down, rinse it with some water after it sits a little bit, then go back again and then go to work. I just wish somebody would have told me that, because it would have saved me time and effort and elbow grease. And that's really where my processes and most of detailing is about, saving me harder work or saving me time in the end. That's really what it comes out to for me.
And do you think it's also, as the older you get, you value that more? I mean, there's a lot of people younger just value, oh, right, I got energy, I got strength, like I got, it's just, you seem, there's, I don't want to say wisdom's just such a weird word, but like you almost do gain a little bit of wisdom the older you get from knowing, hey, I spray a couple more, I don't have to scrub as much. Hey, if I don't scrub as much, you know, my customer's not going to come out and look later and we're going to look at these black wheels that are now kind of grayish, right? Like, there's all kinds of different reasons where you go, you know, listen, it's okay to use a little bit more. It's actually
or that I've just made 10,000 mistakes. And now I'm like, I'm just not going to keep making that same mistake.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's really what it came down to, is I was having to work so hard at certain things that I just tried to find a better way to make it easier on myself. Right. And it wasn't cutting a corner. Actually, it was the way I should have been taught. Had that person known what we know now. We're in a great time for detailing, because detailing, when you and I started, was pretty young as an industry. Mm-hmm. Now that we got, you know, an extra 20 plus years of better chemistry, better products, better knowledge, all those kinds of things, like, I think it's also just taking advantage of the mistakes you make plus things getting better, right? But some of these things aren't possible if you use the wrong chemicals. So the reason why guys wouldn't do some of the things that we show in this particular video is you use a really acidic iron decon product. You're worried about it screwing up the wheel. Where ours, it's like, man, just let it sit. You know, let it work. Let it go, you know, then rinse it. And then just spray a little bit more on. And then cover it with some TRX with the foam cannon, which we show in the video for this particular situation. And I think it's probably just a combination of me making so many mistakes that now I just want to avoid it at all cost.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool to see, I think, the different people that do interact and want to talk through of, you know, some real ideas and some real, okay, well, thanks so much. It's cool to see also inside the specialist group, the people that talk through things. I love seeing, especially big props to another Nick inside the group. And that's Pig Daddy. Pig Daddy was out at his first show of the season, out hustling, love seeing the new tents, got the HyperClean products out there. We have more new, going out today, new distributor order from this weekend. We've got multiple new distributors launching out, as well as then the ones that have joined over the past couple of years, ready to go and attack the season and get out there at the shows. Love seeing that. Love seeing the questions too. There's a dealership question, a couple of dealership questions that you come to find out to be interesting. One, we had some plastics that had some damage coming from a dealership. And then we had a cool question from Edward about, hey, you know, dealerships are selling a lot more ceramic coatings. And it's now starting to become even a heavier push is what he was talking about. Excuse me. And he was curious about, you know, how to combat that. You know, is that something you ever have to talk to your customers about? Or did you already preload into their minds so they never even have to get to that point of questioning?
Look, I think it always comes up. Right. As dealerships have been around and done things for so long, they're jumping into everything. I mean, you look at most major cities, dealerships are doing PPF at the dealership. They're doing ceramic coating at the dealership. They're doing tint at the dealership. They're doing everything at the dealership. And one of the things that oftentimes, you know, frustrates all of us is that we know that they're probably not doing these things on the highest level. But they're talking to usually an uneducated customer or a customer that's just trying to get in and out of the F&I office. And so I look at it and I always say the same thing. I'm okay with it because I know if a customer comes to me, I'm just going to tell them truth about the dealership. I'm not going to hate on the dealership. I'm not going to bash the dealership. I'm just going to say, does it really make sense to you that the dealership's doing all of these things? Most customers, when you start to talk to them, go, no, I don't really trust the dealership, that kind of thing. Should it happen? No. But remember, if the dealership thinks that it's missing out on money and you're making it instead of them, they're going to do it.
Absolutely.
We've had the body shop question recently on the Ask Me Anything. Body shops are in the ceramic coating business. Would I trust them? No, because I largely don't trust most of them to put the car back properly. I don't trust them as, you know, but you get into this terminology of staying in your lane, and you got to remember, there's a lot of businesses in the world that don't stay in their lane. Car dealerships are great at distributing cars. They're largely horrific at everything else, right? So people would find it weird if I said, hey, out of my detail shop, I'm going to start selling Toyotas directly from Toyota. You go, what do you know about distributing cars? Well, I don't know anything, right? But I'm going to do it anyway. I have no knowledge. That's the same thing I see with dealerships and body shops and so many people in the auto business. You know, like Tesla getting into PPF. What the hell does Tesla know about PPF? They can hardly put the car together.
All right. So let me ask this question, though, because I kind of thought of it. And he's like, you know, how do I go and combat this? And I go, which is why I wanted to ask you, like, do you ever talk to your customers like and pre-educate them on, hey, if you're going to be buying a car, here's the things to look out for or. Do you think that that's something that we should start to do on social, become part of our marketing as detailers? Because let's be real. Let's be real for a moment. There's plenty of us that want to debate chemicals on YouTube. There's plenty of us that want to compare, right? Well, where's the comparison at the dealership level, right? Where's the comparison of, hey, you know, I went over this dealership and I got this. Wasn't no need to name, right? There's this jet company. There's this other company. Like there's these companies that have these sealants they put on cars that are now putting shrimp. Like they're washing cars. Okay. Well, go get the product. It's there. Like, where do we ever see those comparisons on social media or on YouTube where we start seeing detailers or the recon side of the auto industry start to push back with some tangible evidence with videos? Well, like I said, we'll compare detail products, but we're not going to compare and kind of go after the warranty company products.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. You know, so for a guy like Edward, if he wanted to put out social media content, I think it'd be great. Again, you don't want to do it from a hateful place. You want to do it from an educational place. This isn't what dealerships are great at. They're not using high quality products. They're selling you largely paper. They're not selling you an actual ceramic coating. And, you know, look, the stories you and I get about people just spraying foam onto a car and rinsing it off and charging people $1,500, $2,500, $3,500, it's rampant. This is one of those things I don't get that worked up about. Because my entire life, this is what dealerships have been doing. I mean, it's never been different in my life. And so if it hasn't been different in my life, most of our listeners, it's never been different in their life. Now, I want to separate that out, that we know there are some dealerships that do things the right way. They do. They do put good ceramic coatings on cars. They do bring people in.
We've got cases of coating going out today to a particular dealership. Like we service dealerships with coatings.
Yeah, so we know people do, but this is like my body shop conversation. About 10% of body shops are doing the right thing. The other 90%, you got to be leery of. About 10% of dealerships are doing things the right way when it comes to coding. The other 90%, you got to be okay with the educational part. You have to be okay standing your ground and saying, hey, you guys are being sold something at a dealership. Let me walk you through and explain to you how we're different, how there's a different quality, how you're going to get something out of ours that you're not going to get out of something at a dealership. I think it's a great idea. But also, don't think for one second that dealerships really steal a lot of your business. Because most of the time, they sell to people that would never come to a detailer anyway. Just remember that. Less than 5% of all car owners in your city, wherever you live, are going to interact with you as a detailer on a yearly basis. So the 95% that bought the cars, they weren't coming to you anyway. Now, that's another marketing conundrum you have, is how do I get more of those people to me? So that's the good thing, is we have all this room for growth of getting people into the detailing industry. But largely, I don't let that stuff affect me. When customers talk to me, I absolutely tell them the truth about dealerships. I tell them what to do, what not to do. And I'll tell you this, it's about a 50-50 whether they're going to listen or not. Because I've had a whole bunch of people that I've talked to 1 hour before they walked into that dealership, and 3 hours later, they have everything I told them not to buy. And in a lot of cases, we're ripping PPF off the next day. We're ripping tint off the next day. That's their problem. I did educate them, but they kind of don't feel comfortable pushing back on those F&I guys and gals, and they get stuck in some things. So I think it'd be a great thing to put on your social media if you're willing to do it properly and not hateful and just doing it strictly educational. I think it could be a great way for you to kind of get some things on social media.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. You said 50-50. There's another 50-50 that came to my mind. It's the 50-50. Have you done it? Have you not done it? A couple posts inside the specialist group, we had a spray paint. Listen, I haven't ever messed with spray paints. Not in my world. I've messed with, you know, I shared that story about GMC guy. You know, he spilled some paint, but that's different than spray paint. I haven't messed with spray paint, but I have done what Seth, he put towels over the hood and his roof because he had hail coming. And we had, there was hail here this past week. Like, it's a real thing coming into protecting your cars, getting ready for hail season. We had our first sort of tornado start to come through the Midwest. I think there was even some damage in a state here locally. Like, now that season started to come through, hail's wild. I said to you, I've been fascinated with hail. Like, balls of frozen ice coming down, and like it's just always mesmerizing to me. So then you get hail on your car. Well, what do you do? Right? Like, I mean, is that a dealership thing? Is that a body shop thing? What? How do I find out who's going to work on my car?
Well, nobody loves hail quite like the PDR guys.
There you go.
And for for people that don't know, the money in PDR is chasing storms. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what they do. And they make a ton of money doing it. And they do get subcontracted by dealerships and fleets and all those kinds of things. So, look, if you're in the Midwest and you get hit with hail a lot, we do randomly get some hail out here. It's obviously not softball sized. It's usually just very small. But I always say this, man, you got to have PDR guys on your Rolodex as a detailer, even if it's just to refer work or bring them in to help you, you know, fix somebody's car. I have some PDR situations we got to handle here at the shop in the next couple weeks for some customers. I largely think you got to have a PDR connection that you trust, because it's like anything else. There's bad work out there. There's great work out there. You send your customers somewhere, and look, we largely don't want to vouch for anybody, but PDR is one of those things that when a guy is good, it's easy to see, and he's a guy you want to know, right? Because it's definitely helpful.
And it's definitely a connection point around different services in the industry. When we were at Mobile Tech and heavily doing things there, we encouraged, that's why we had that community pub and all that stuff, encouraged everybody to work together. We found people that would begin to pair up and find, oh, you're in my city. Oh, you're close to me. And you would see this really joint venture where they could network together. People talk about, go to this business network. Like, what about a local network around other service providers that also would, like you'd mentioned, hey, I can get a PDR guy to come in and take care of some stuff. Well, a PDR guy, maybe he does or maybe he doesn't have a referral for you. It ultimately doesn't really matter. Like, there's something about building a network, but hold on a second. There's going to be people go, network? What do you mean? What's a network? What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, you hear the age-old adage, right? Your network is your net worth. And this is one of those things that we kind of talk about. I wish somebody would have explained it better to me, because I just kind of took it as like, well, if I know a whole bunch of successful people, that's a great network. And that largely is what people think about. And so a network could be, hey, a network of other service providers. If I don't provide tent, I can bring in a tent guy. I can bring in a PDR guy. I can bring in a PPF guy. That largely gets tough to manage because everybody's time, whatever. But PDR guys are great for detailers. The other thing is, you know, we talk to a lot of people. I know a lot of people listening to this are in business for themselves in some way, or want to go into business or get better at business. And now your network becomes much broader. You know, how do you network with people having success in business? It becomes probably the most important thing you're going to do. Because as you know, if you're hanging out with a bunch of people not having a bunch of success as business owners, when you start out, you really don't know what that looks like. You know, you really don't know the hours. You don't know the risks. You don't know all those things. So how do you start to build these individuals in your city? Usually is where you do this. One may be an insurance agent. One could be, you know, a random business owner that sells widgets. I mean, it doesn't matter. What I've been able to do, and I think probably, you know, saved myself as a business owner a lot of headache and also propelled me to more success than I was probably going to get, was meeting some of these people that have nothing to do with the car world. They're just successful business people. And now you start to refer each other work, or, you know, where your paths cross. Hey, maybe some of those people become your customers, but also they provide you an avenue into investing in other businesses. You know, they go, hey, so-and-so is running short on money. He's got a great idea. Would you be interested? Or I'm working on this project where you have this certain skill set of going direct to consumer. Would you like to be involved? And you start to see that a network becomes more than just a body shop and a PDR guy. It becomes about gathering successful people that have done it on their own when you're trying to be in business. And that's really where a lot of this stuff has not been flushed out publicly enough for me to understand when I first got my start.
And I imagine most people listening are kind of going the same thing, right? Like, hold on, well, let's flush this out. Like, maybe are really curious, not really understanding how in depth this goes or where do I start? What do I even do? Okay, a course, right? You're going to get some of the main, you know, things that you might need and things that you could offer, right? Have somebody that you can communicate and discuss with. We'll get to some problems later that arise. But if I'm going to start out just thinking I've got to build a network here, there's a characteristic that we wanted to specifically talk about because we want to always, every time we think that we're going to go do something or look at something, there's a rule. It's that 80-20 rule. Like, where does the most benefit come out and who causes the most problem, right? You take it a little bit further and you even go to the top 10%. So not just the 20% of the people that you want to work with, but the top 10% that you do want to work with, a lot of them have a characteristic that rubs some of us the wrong way.
Yeah.
That characteristic is a very blunt way of speaking.
Yeah. So one of the things when people hear me speak now, I was probably most heavily influenced by working with my network. When I started to develop a network, I started to see a through pattern that went to all of these people, right? So let's say I have seven people I'm really tight with in my network of successful business owners in my city. And that's about my number, right? Seven really successful guys that I've gotten close to in business. If we all sit down for a steak dinner at Cattleman's, as an example, where you visited, one of the things people notice is all seven of those people are different, right? They're, some of them are really outgoing, some are funny, some are quiet, some are always serious, some are never serious in those settings. But when you get to talking about business and there's a business deal on the table, all seven of those people who are different human beings, brought up differently, speak differently, have different, you know, personalities, their personalities are almost identical. They're almost 100% across the board identical. They may speak differently during the business deal. They may use different verbiage, but they're all very direct and very, what's the problem? How are we going to solve it? How are we going to get to making money? And they don't really do a bunch of in between. So it's really interesting. That's something I picked up on. Again, nobody taught me that. It's just something that I watched amongst successful people is, hey man, they're out for a steak. They're all laughing, having a good time. The minute at that meal that a business deal is brought up, it's almost like all seven of those people are the identical person.
It's also that if you're a lower level person looking at a higher level person, it is that thing that so much, whether that's media, movies, listen, you watch any movie about a successful businessman, they're very crass. They're very straight. They're very bat, 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 bat. And so it comes across the way media does it, you know, because they're trying to market to the 80%, to the 90%, comes across as very crass and very rude and like these people don't care about you. And there's, is it really that they don't care? Is it? Or is it, hey, we care so much. Let's get all this little stuff out of the way. Let's just get straight to the point. We're going to go A to B. There's no reason to go under all this other stuff. We're just going to be much more direct. So you think it's for clarity? Like, hey, let's get direct. Let's be clear. And because, wait, maybe it's, hey, listen, maybe they are crass. Maybe like, listen, time is money.
Yeah,
I ain't got time to talk about all this stuff. I just got to talk right now. So is it to clarify and go direct? Like, hey, we don't want any gray area? Or is it, oh, no, listen, I got to get it now.
It's both. It's both. First of all, when you have a certain level of success, and that's different for everybody, wherever this kind of switch turns on in your head, when you start to realize time is money, you really do cut out a lot of the fat, right? You go, I got 10 meetings lined up today.
Dude, I love cutting fat on that ribeye, man. That's why I got that strip this weekend. I went straight to the strip. Listen, that's the way to go.
You're one step from ordering shoe leather at the steakhouse. So we'll skip that right now. But no, once you realize time is money, I think you do become more what people would say, talk cross or talk crassly. You get very direct. The other thing is when you do business deals, people know lawyers are going to have to get involved. And the more that we can flush this out right now and get to the point, the less likely we have any misunderstanding. you and I have found this a lot, you know, and I'm just referencing something that we both have gone through quite a bit in the last 3 years. You and I really value human beings we're doing business with to get direct to the point. Why is that? Well, for those that don't know, Marty's running out of time. I'm running out of time. Our staff's running out of time. So every minute that these people are trying to dance around an issue we may be having with the raw material, or somebody at our HQ is trying to dodge a box issue or a bottling issue we have, they've now taken a 1 minute problem and made it a 15 minute problem, or a 1 minute problem becomes a 3 hour problem. We can think of this in the car world. If I maintain my car every week, I can do that in an hour. If I let it go out of control for 6 months, I now have a whole day to get this thing back in order, right? So problems compound on top of themselves and then become bigger and bigger and bigger and harder to get your arms around. And so you and I have even learned in the last 3 years together that we have such a high value on direct people. I don't care if they talk cross. I don't care if they're mean. I care that they're going to give us the truth, give it as fast as possible, get us from A to B in this problem. Because you see this a lot when you're on a phone conversation and you start to get deeper in business, and some of you listening probably have experienced this. When you're talking to somebody and you're standing at point A, and all of a sudden they go to point P, and then they go to point Y, and then they come back to point C, and you haven't even got the ball to point B yet, it can be a really frustrating thing. Because you know none of this other stuff matters till we get the ball to point B, and then we get it to C, then we get it to D. And that's the way that networks deal with each other, right? Really successful networking is finding like-minded individuals that are trying to get things done. And that's why there's so few of them, right? That's why it's only 10% of the population, because there's a large percent of the population that wants all the fluff, that wants all the niceties, that wants all these things, and wants to think that the world's rainbows and unicorns. I think at the top of this, what you've experienced and I've experienced is that the network is your net worth thing, is you're going to have pretty thick skin, because these guys and gals having success, something goes wrong, they're going to let everybody know about it. And it's going to become a tough situation.
So what fluff, right? What fat gets cut out? You know, it's not adverbs, right? It's not ands, buts, and all, right? There's a lot of us that go, no, that person was just an asshole, right? Yeah. Like, and sometimes it comes across that way because they need to get so direct. There's not the how you doing, how's life, you know, what do you think about this? Okay, now let's talk about that. And, you know, and that does have its place.
Yeah, it does. 100%. And it does. You know what they cut out? Your feelings about why something didn't get done. That's where people have real issues. And look, you've had those issues and I've had those issues where I felt like, hey, I tried this. I want to tell you the story. And they're like, I don't care about the story. It's not done. You know, well, I had this person in the hospital. Great. I don't care. You told me you would get this done. You didn't. Right. And people take that, and it's easy for all of us to take that, like somebody doesn't care. But remember, high net worth individuals are dealing with money and money issues, and largely more than they are with your feelings or my feelings or the next guy's feelings. They understand what it's like to get the ball over the finish line and make a lot of money. So they know what it takes to be there, right? That's where they get more and shorter and shorter in their responses, and they get less and less likely to believe people's story. Because remember, at some point in their life, they were told a story that they found out wasn't true. This guy told me his grandma died. I saw his grandma 3 weeks later. You know what I mean? It happens every day in business. You know, happens every day with a team member. Happens every day all across the country that way. So as they get more and more experienced, they're less likely to believe anybody's story. You know, it's like an attorney. They just don't believe anything.
Okay, here's a great example. Everybody that has all these questions about team members, employees, hiring, and all that stuff. Well, so the adage that we all get to is after you've done enough interviews, you realize everybody puts on their best face at an interview. Everybody puts on their best work ethic the first little bit that they show up, the first month, yep. The first whatever. Like, you just begin to accept it. And yep. To me, Then the interviews got a lot quicker. I knew I was going to get a lot of fluff, right? Yep. From these type of people. And I didn't hold it against them. I just learned. So then as I grew and I looked down to looking up, then you can see that transition of, okay, I don't want to really get into all this stuff with all these people. Like, I just need these answers. Then I can look forward when I'm talking to that person that is on an upper level. And when they're more short with me, I go, ah, okay.
They've been through this before.
You've been through it. Like,
yeah, it's a great analogy, right? Like, largely interviewing is a crapshoot. And why is it a crapshoot? Because everybody tells you they've never gotten fired. Then you find out they did. They've never done a bad job. You find out otherwise. And so now the next interview takes on the characteristics of that interview where you heard all this stuff that was BS and you just start cutting the fluff out. And so your network, if it's right, is going to be a network where no one's kissing anyone's ass and everyone's straight to the point. And let me tell you, if you don't know how to do business that way, the likelihood of you building a network of largely successful, made lots of money individuals is not going to happen, because they don't want to hear about your family. They don't want to hear about your problems. They don't want to hear about any of that stuff. They just want you to get things done. And if you get called upon and you start to build this network, and this is the key point of it, if this network calls on you and says, hey, we have this opportunity and your skill set would fit in this opportunity, and then you accept and you don't perform, you've burned your opportunities with that network. Because if you screw up the first time with no track record, there ain't a second time. And now all of that legwork you've put in, maybe over years of getting in good with these people, when they call on you, you better be able to perform at whatever task you said you were good at. And there is no excuse of getting out, because now those people only live in the performance world. Did you perform or didn't you? Now, when you get a bunch of success under your belt working with them, they got a lot more leeway for you. But no track record, this is where people burn their network a lot of times, is they pass on too many deals, or they don't provide enough value, or when they're called on to provide value, they screw it up. And all of a sudden, those people look at each other and go, this ain't the guy.
So you mentioned, how many people do you have that you call your network?
I'm probably realistically, consistently 7. I probably have a total of like 15 that will bring me into deals or give me opportunities to invest in things, but 7 that I really closely work with.
Well, I think some people hear that number and they're like, oh, that's, then other people are going to hear that number and be like, Nick, dude, I got like 10,000 in my network on Instagram. I got another 80,000 in TikTok, right? Like,
yeah.
Is social media a network? Like, are followers a network? Is people that you follow, is that a network? Like, that becomes a really interesting kind of theory or discussion point, because we didn't used to have this other form of growing a network, but there's plenty of people that consider the people that they interact with online, whether that's in a Facebook group, whether that's leaving comments and watching people. There's a lot of us that feel that is a network. I like people's stuff. I leave a comment. I talk to these people in a group. Isn't that a network?
Look, I think in the way we're talking about network and net worth, if those things lead you to money in your business and lead you to opportunity, then you can absolutely have that feeling, right? I mean, look at Mr. Beast. I mean, what's he make a year? Like $50, $100 million a year? He's got a pretty nice network on the internet. And that's real. Look at the Paul brothers and what they've turned their social media network into, and all these business opportunities. So yeah, it absolutely can be in 2024 a network that you meet individuals that allow you more success. The question I think where you're headed with this is, you and I also know a lot of people that we've watched closely for the last 3 to 5 years on social media scream into the abyss on their social media pages, right? And they would tell themselves, or they'd tell you or myself, I got this network of people that follow me, and they went from getting 25 likes and now they're getting 5 likes on posts, and nothing's working, and they're not getting money out of social media. They're not building a following out of social media. So I think anything can be a network. But remember, in the topic of this conversation, it's about having a network that benefits your net worth at the end of the day. And so if you use social media correctly, 100% you can benefit your net worth, and it can be considered a nice network for your business. That's, again, a very small percentage of people that have done that. You and I have talked to people with 50,000 subscribers on YouTube that largely have no clue how to monetize it and no clue what they're doing. They just have been doing content so long that they're just convinced they're doing it right, even though they admit there's no money.
Okay, so I want to clarify something, though, because it might come across that you're saying the only reason to have a network is to make money off of the network, right? Like, okay, I shouldn't do anything unless I'm going to make money off of it. I kind of consider, and this is why I want to toss it back and forth, I kind of consider a network more like this circle. And I just fall into one point of this circle, because you talk about in the past how money and everything kind of, it flows. And it always wants to continue to move. And there's always transactions along. And so I've always thought of network as like this circle that continues to go through. Or what's that, that
the infinity
one,
loop.
The infinity yeah. loop, right? Falling someplace in there that, listen, I might not be a part of taking the money at that point, but I'm inside of this network that is flowing. I mean, you define it as money. I've just always thought of like flowing commerce, flowing, which is money, but
yeah.
flowing ideas, flowing discussions, flowing,
agreed.
Hey, this customer needs this. Like, I really just wanted to emphasize a moment of going, you don't have to make money every moment of
yes.
a network.
Agreed. Agreed. And that's a great way, a great thing to bring up. It's just an opportunity that somewhere down the line you will have the chance, right? So your network is not about every time I pick up the phone with somebody in my network, I'm not going to make money off of it, right? But I know continuing to build that relationship until continuing to be a valuable person in that network, that somewhere along the line in your infinity loop, there's going to be an opportunity I'm given and I'm going to be able to take advantage of it. And therefore, my network benefits my net worth. But it's definitely not every time I pick up the phone, and it's probably 1 out of 100 times that I pick up the phone, right? It's not a every time I do something, I got to get paid for it type of thing. It's genuinely wanting to be around like-minded individuals and learn from them while they learn from you at the things you're good at. And sooner or later, all of those things meet up for this one deal, this 5 deals, these 3 deals, these 2 deals, where everybody has a chance to benefit from one another in some way, shape, or form. It's just like when we get in a car accident. The infinity loop in my network right now is I know everybody that's important in the car accident world here in Las Vegas. I mean, I know a guy that owns 60% of that market here. We get in a car accident, I call him, he's in my network. So now he gets to be a service provider. He gets to hook us up with the attorney. He gets to do this. He gets to do that. He gets all because he knows me. And then all the people I refer to him in my network outside of him into his and his into mine. And all of these different things feed one another. But it's definitely, like you said, it's not always about picking up the phone and that from that person that I'm going to make money. It's truly building a network that you're just trying to learn from. They're trying to learn from you. You enjoy each other as business people. You learn. And somewhere along the way, you're going to have a chance to make some money in this thing. And you're going to have to be ready for that.
Where do I find people for my network? This is where I think the interesting part is. Can a Facebook group, can a local Facebook sure. group, could you find it there? Could you find it? We have detailers in all parts always ask, hey, should I go be part of this business network or this chamber of this or this, right? Like these groups of people that want to, you know, get together to say, hey, we're going to form a network. Like I just always struggled in those places. I dream of having a Facebook network. That would be awesome. I mean, I think that's Mark's ultimate desire, but will that really ever happen? I don't know that you could do it a complete network online on social. You never meet the people. You never get to look at them in the face. You don't get to shake their hand. You don't get to understand their character, you know, in a real world. I struggle with even going to those commerce type settings like we talked about a second ago, because usually I've said it here, they're usually just trying to throw me their card and tell me how great they are, tell me what they're going to do and all this. How do I start to actually form a network if I'm somebody going, okay, I've been in business years, but I don't really have connections?
Yeah. So one of the ways that I built a network was off customers, right? Like, be a good person to be in business with. And usually in our world and detailing, you come across somebody a little bit more successful than you. So you have a network. I can name two people that I met when I was in Tulsa. We worked on their cars. Those guys are in your network. If you called up and said, hey, I want to have lunch, I got to bounce a business idea off you, they would do that. You didn't go out of your way to meet them. You got them as customers. But you also sat there and gave to that relationship, right? Every time you saw them, you talked to them a little more. They talked to you more. You sit there and you shot the shit. You know, you did a lot of things. And so I say this all the time to my guys on my team, and I would say it to anybody listening. You go to a successful person's house or they come to your shop and you're not trying to build a relationship with them, that's a miss on you. That's not their fault, right? That doesn't mean jump down their throat and say, hey, I'd really love if you mentored me. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. But are you like a good human being to be around? Hey, man, you're in my shop. Can I get you something to drink? Have a seat. Let's shoot the shit. What cars you like? What are you doing? What do you do for a living? Oh, cool. Whatever. So your network grew directly through your business. And my network grew through a multitude of ways. First of all, you know, most of you have significant others that work somewhere. There's another place where you can find a network. You go to events, you know, things you and I don't love doing. I don't love going to Christmas parties. I don't love doing all that. But think about the people you meet there in this world that you're not a part of. Think about all these places where you come across people. I do think the Chamber of Commerce and the networking groups and the different things, those can work just fine. But you also have to be there for the right reasons. First of all, you don't like the people that are there for the wrong reasons. Here's my card. Please use me. That's not what you're doing here. You're just trying to get to know people. Hey, man, what do you do? Cool. Yeah. What kind of customers do you have? What world are you in? Explain it to me. Sit there and listen. Like, dude, a lot of the last 10 years of my life, I know you guys hear me talk on this podcast. When I get around successful people, I just ask questions. I just want them to explain things to me in a polite way. I'm not like, hey, can you tell me everything? It's just like, hey, man, what do you do? How's that going? How's business with the economy? What do you see coming? You know, in the flow of conversation, I've gotten a lot of people just that I've met in life. I haven't really gone out of my way. I've just been a genuinely curious guy to learn from others. I think that goes a long way in 2024. Do I think you could do it on Facebook and LinkedIn? And yeah, I think you could do that for sure. It's just, I don't know that it's all that necessary if you're just a genuinely curious person.
So there's part of the key point, right? Curious. Learning. What inhibits then people's network growth? If my net worth is tied to my network, then why is my net worth continuing to decrease and why is my network continuing to decrease? Like, what inhibits a network?
Yeah, I think you and I know this, and we've made the mistakes. You know, we've had times where we've screwed up a relationship in a business relationship or whatever. We all make mistakes. I think the guys that stick out to you and I that we both know is, man, that know-it-all shit doesn't play. Nobody wants to be around it. Nobody. Like, you want a surefire way of people never referring you business or never wanting to be around you or not getting invited to events. Be a know-it-all. No one wants, I mean, anybody listening, you don't want to be around it. But what if you're that guy and you don't realize it? I mean, we see that on Facebook groups and detailing every day.
Phone conversations.
Groups, PPF groups, phone conversations. Like, it's eye-opening. It makes you change the way you speak. It makes you change a lot of things because you're like, I don't even want to be one-tenth of what I'm watching. And I think people can go into to detailing Facebook groups. And I think the specialist group, everybody does a really nice job of just trying to be helpful. But you can go to a lot of detailing Facebook groups. It's like, I'm not sure how everybody in there is not Bezos with what they say. I mean, everybody's charging $50,000 to detail a boat or you know, they detailed 7,000 cars last week. And I'm confused how they have time for the Facebook group in that world and the way that they speak. And what you start to see is you start to see people that are going to struggle to build a really valuable network. And so nobody cares if you think you're the best detailer. Nobody cares if you think you're the best PPF installer or tent installer, especially not people that are in other businesses. So if that's your whole persona, you don't have anything to offer successful people because they don't really act like know-it-alls. Usually most people are just curious. And if you take away that curiosity, man, I don't think people really are going to find that they want to do business with you.
Are you at the top of your network? Do you look around your network and you go, I'm the top dog?
No, not even close. Number one, some guys in my network have 10 to 15 years on me. I do know some things. I'm better at real estate than the guys at the top end of my network. They're better at a lot of other things, you know, than I am. I mean, some of those guys ask me for investment advice and I ask them for other advice. So no, and from a net worth perspective, I'm not close to the top dog. And I don't want to be. I always want people that I can learn from that have been somewhere that I'm not.
But that's how many of us, and that's why I brought it up and I cut you off. I apologize, but I cut you off to go. And that's really ultimately what I think the big problem with so many of us is we want to be the top. We think of our network as we want to be the people that says to other people what's going on. And that puts us at this pedestal and we're the guy, right? Like we're the guy. You go be the guy. Great. Well, there's no sharpening. There's no, everybody wants to grind. Like, really? Yeah. Well, you need some type of interaction with somebody else that will help you sharpen, cut out stuff. We just talked earlier about getting A to B faster. Some of those things you need to get cut out is the way you talk, your lingo. So if you're only always being the big dog, if your network is nothing but you being the guy, really, are you sharpening? Are you cutting things out? Or are you really more bloating and more like the people I saw at the restaurant this weekend where I go, man, this is a place I need to be because I see the size of them, right? Like, that means there's going to be some good food here.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And one of the things that I look at is think of the NFL. That's a lot of rich owners. There's two top dogs. The other ones aren't the top dogs at the NFL. Right? Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones. What do they have in common? They got a billion years in the NFL, right? And they're the most successful fiscally in the things of running their organization. So everyone else, when they go to the owners meetings, they're listening to those individuals. In the NBA, there was a guy named Dr. Jerry Buss who owned the Lakers. When he spoke at the owners meeting, everyone listened. That's a bunch of billionaires. They're still listening to somebody, right, on that specific issue. Now, if that billionaire walked into the other billionaire's office that made money in a totally different way in their private life, they wouldn't listen to them. But sitting in those owners' meetings, if they haven't been the ones that made everything happen in the NFL or the NBA, guess who they listen to? The guy that did, right? That's just how this thing works. And so, yeah, man, I probably got four guys that I look at. But I've also watched a number of people try to come into this network and screw it up. Lied about their net worth, lied about money they could put into deals, lied about what they were good at. And so they spend all this time trying to get in this network, and then they get in, and it turns out their story doesn't check out. When people start calling on them, they don't produce. And so there's a double-edged sword here that you got to find ways to get things done. But I like what you said about the infinity loop. You're not always going to get something out of everybody. You're not there to get something out of everybody. You're there to learn. And through the learning and providing what you're good at, you're going to find that you're going to find your place in this network, and it's going to end up benefiting your net worth. But you can't, and we see this when people call us, right? People somehow get our cell phone or whatever, and they call us and they want us to solve their entire business on a phone call. That's not really fair. Right? Number one, I don't know your business. I don't know your issues. and you haven't even spent any time trying to get into a network and learn how this thing works. You just want an answer to a problem. And that largely just doesn't happen. That's not what your network is there to do. Your network is there, I largely say it, call it being business friends. You know, treat your business friends like you treat your friends that you're not in business with. And if you can't do that, largely you're not going to have a network that enjoys having you around, because at the end, the only guys you want to be around are the good guys anyway. They're fun to be around. They're good guys. They get shit done. They talk honestly. They're not about the fluff. They're really there to get work done. But guess what? They're enjoyable to work with because they do get things done, and they're not always trying to take from the system.
Yeah. That's, I think, is a big one, right? The not listening is one thing, and then not always having to take and being okay with giving. Like, I love those too, man. Great talk. Love these. Yeah. All right, man. Everybody, have a great week. We'll see y'all next time.
All right, guys.